The Franciscan order emerged during a period of economic transformation that brought about a new understanding of wealth. In the feudal system, wealth and power were tied to land ownership, signifying the influence and social status of the landowner. During the 12th and 13th centuries, the revival of trade shifted wealth towards the possession of money and other more flexible assets. This shift weakened the rigid medieval structure that defined and secured each person's social role, leading to an increase in the number of poor and displaced individuals. Today, the concept of wealth has become even more abstract with the advent of complex financial instruments and digital currencies. In my presentation, I will explore how the Franciscans responded to these social changes, aiming to humanize the new economy so that it could serve both individuals and the community. Today, we must once again embrace the Franciscan emphasis on relational goods over economic goods. Only by doing so can the globalized economy foster a more fraternal and sustainable world. 1. Today, labor is no longer considered the source of wealth. Traditionally, labor was regarded as the foundation of wealth and economic value. In contemporary society, however, there is a preference for the speculative practices of finance moguls and brokers. Those unable to compete in this financial arena suffer the humiliation of being excluded from economic progress and are often dependent on the benevolence of others. The recent economic crisis of 2007 has highlighted the detrimental effects of separating work from wealth creation and the economic sphere from the social one. These separations have led to three significant paradoxes. 1. Growing inequalities. Despite the rise in global wealth, inequalities continue to expand. The current development model has created a world that is immeasurably more unequal than it was 300 years ago. Between 1900 and 2000, the world population increased almost fourfold, while the growth in wealth produced worldwide was much greater, resulting in a significant rise of average per capita income. At the same time, however, the distribution of wealth did not become fairer, but in many cases worsened. 2. Improved production, increased hunger. The economic system has enhanced its ability to produce food and other essential goods, yet the number of hungry people continues to rise. 3. Unhappiness. Material goods have increased, but people remain unhappy. Aristotle already affirmed that two components are essential for happiness. The material or acquisitive and the expressive component, which is the network of relationships that unite people. Without relational goods, true happiness is unattainable. 1.1. Speculative financial activities prevail over labor. The honest and hard-working daily labor, which everyone can perform, does not lead to quick and easy wealth. Therefore, speculative financial activities and stock exchanges are prioritized. Here, the smartest individuals gamble with everyone's fortunes, paying little heed to ethical considerations or democratic deliberations. Quick gain is the primary goal, rather than viewing profit as fair compensation that society grants to those who honestly provide goods and services to the community. Unfortunately, those smart people who manage today's finances appear to be more interested in stock quotes than in productive activities. This mindset is permeating all social strata. Lottery, bingo, and gambling are other alternatives accessible to many, promising maximum profit with minimum effort. In our greedy and efficiency-driven context, labor has been marginalized, valued only in relation to salary, detached from personal fulfillment, and without any direct connection to the common good. The mercantile mentality ultimately dehumanizes labor, ignoring its subjective and communal aspects. 1.2. Labor is just a good ascetic exercise. Among Western monks, manual work was regarded as a beneficial ascetic exercise to avoid idleness, laziness, and indolence, which were seen as sources of all kinds of vices. Labor was considered a guarantee of an honest life. Based on biblical teachings, cf. 1 Thess. 4:11-12, the rule of Saint Benedict emphasizes prayer and work as fundamental activities in religious life. However, manual work was still viewed with some reticence, as it was thought to potentially brutalize individuals and hinder spiritual elevation. In the monasteries of the Cluny Reformation, laypeople performed agricultural and manual labor, while monks, usually of noble origin, engaged in transcribing codices or performing activities that required greater technical skill. The Cistercian reform once again promoted manual labor, following the rule of Saint Benedict, but soon reserved it for the converts, who were second-class monks, usually illiterate and of plebeian origin. In France's time, manual labor was typically considered a degrading activity and a sign of low social status. It was carried out by workers, while the other two main social classes avoided it, the military and the clergy. 2. Francis of Assisi lives in a period of economic change. The fathers of the church viewed wealth as static and limited. Those who take possession of a significant portion of it and become rich were seen as potential thieves. Because they were depriving others and transforming them into poor, their teachings on charity and luxury were based on these ideas. The bread which you hold back belongs to the hungry, the coat which you guard in your locked storage chests belongs to the naked. The footwear moldering in your closet belongs to those without shoes. The silver that you keep hidden in a safe place belongs to the one in need. Thus, however many are those whom you could have provided for, so many are those whom you wrong. The barbarian invasions of the V6 centuries led to an economy of pure subsistence during the 7 Zi centuries, focused on the satisfaction of basic needs. The economy was static, and economic goods were seen as isolated entities. This feudal economy had a very small geographical scope, and the political power could control production, trade, and distribution. The economy was merely subsistence-based, subject to periodicity and the fluctuations typical of fairs. 2.1, a new concept of wealth after the 12th-13th centuries. Francis of Assisi was born in 1181, during a time of economic transformation. Indeed, several economic trends that emerged in Europe during the 12th and 13th centuries persist to this day. During these centuries, the self-sufficient feudal economy began to open up to stable trade. Local political power weakened and could no longer guarantee everyone's subsistence, leading to economic activities increasingly relying on distant centers of influence. Additionally, the development of stable and reliable transportation networks enabled trade with the Middle East and ensured the consistent availability of stored goods. This new economic environment introduced a new concept of wealth. In the self-sufficient feudal economy, wealth was tied to tangible assets like land, livestock, and natural resources. However, with the rise of trade in the 12th and 13th centuries, money became the primary measure and medium of exchange for value. Possessions were considered wealth only to the extent that they could be converted into money. Eventually, labor itself became commodified as a means to generate money. Money took on a life of its own, becoming a form of wealth that could produce more wealth. Trading in money became as profitable as trading in any other asset. This shift changed the perception of interest loans, which were no longer seen as usury but rather as the sale of the availability of money. Loans were no longer intended solely for those in urgent need but also for those seeking to generate wealth through wealth. 2.2. Money is a symbol of wealth and power. In a society increasingly driven by greed and efficiency, Francis, the son of the merchant Pietro Bernardone, made a radical rejection of money, which was becoming a symbol of wealth and power. Early hagiographical sources emphasize Francis's strict prohibition of money, equating it to manure and likening it to a devil and poisonous snake. This radical rejection contrasts with the more lenient position of Saint Dominic and the Dominican order. Rejecting money, Francis radically questions the accumulation and commodification that the new monetary economy was favoring. Already in the early days of his conversion, in the church of Saint Damiano, Francis had thrown through a window the coins that the priest refused to accept for fear of Pietro Bernardone. This gesture shows well that his determination to get rid of money was stronger than the desire to use it in a plausible way. Thus, Francis challenges prophetically the submission of man to capital and consumerism. He also identifies himself with the poorest of society, who were not paid in cash. By rejecting money, Francis fundamentally questioned the accumulation and commodification encouraged by the emerging monetary economy. Early in his conversion, at the Church of Saint Damiano, Francis threw coins out of a window after the priest refused them, fearing Pietro Bernardone's wrath. This act demonstrated that Francis's determination to renounce money was stronger than the desire to use it for plausible purposes. Thus, Francis prophetically challenged humanity's submission to capital and consumerism, identifying himself with the poorest, who were not paid in cash. Francis believed that people and all created beings have intrinsic value that cannot be reduced to monetary calculations. They are valuable because they are the fruits of God's love, not because of their utility. He instructed his friars not to value people based on appearance or utility. Whoever comes to them, friend or foe, thief or robber, let him be received with kindness. The more deprived of mercantile utility life is, the more it calls for a responsibility, as God has chosen weakness as his dwelling. Having discovered the treasure of divine love, the former merchant of Assisi renounced money and rejected the mentality that reduces everything to an objectified, measurable, and interchangeable commodity. Money conceals the true value of every single thing, which goes far beyond its monetary price. Greed blinds and fools people, as those who cling to money lack the necessary perspective to see beyond appearances. Contrary to the belief that everything can be bought with money, Francis forbade his friars from accepting it as payment for their work. Interestingly, while strictly rejecting money, Francis left the concept of necessity open and imprecise. This contrast suggests that the measure and purpose of labor and the entire economy should be centered on the human person and his evolving needs, not on capital. Therefore, the amount of material goods the Franciscans accept from spiritual friends depends on places, seasons, and cold climates. LR 4.2. ER 2.7, but they should not accept money or consider it necessary. 2.3. The economic choices of Francis and his followers. By embracing poverty and rejecting money, Francis of Assisi prophetically challenged the subordination of human beings to capital and consumerism. He urged his friars to avoid any kind of accumulation or appropriation. Neither house, nor place, nor anything at all, his poverty is relational, oriented toward solidarity rather than austerity or self-perfection. He seeks the inner freedom that enables fraternal relationships. His austerity and economic choices stem from a theological and relational perspective. Unlike the monastic communities of his time, Francis did not want his friars to possess the means of production. Following his teachings, the Franciscans renounced wealth and relied on almsgiving for theological and vocational reasons. However, they did not propose this lifestyle as a universal path, because they acknowledged the importance of economics in addressing social problems. To live is to produce and to collaborate for the common good. They aimed to humanize the new economic reality from a specific theological perspective, encouraging everyone to use the gifts they had freely received in service to the community. It may seem paradoxical that friars who embraced radical poverty made such a significant contribution to the humanization of the new economy. The key lies in their affectionate closeness to poor and simple people. Living among those who lacked the means to thrive in the new economy and suffered exploitation by usurers, the followers of Saint Francis sought to help them with innovative solutions aimed at stimulating individual initiative within the framework of the common good. 3. Labor is the ordinary way of earning a living. The negative perception of manual labor began to change during Francis's time. 12th century pauperist movements had revalued labor as a way to live the gospel more perfectly. Craftsmanship, in particular, was increasingly appreciated in this period. Reflecting this new social valuation, Francis affirmed that the friars should work to set a good example. Faced with the greed and financial speculation of usurers, Francis considers work to be the ordinary way of earning a living. ER 7. Test 21, although he also encourages his friars to practice begging and appreciates its ascetic dimension. In his testament, he asks all brothers to give themselves to honest work and that those who do not know how to work learn. James of Vitry attests that both friars and poor clares were living by the work of their hands. If begging were compulsory or prioritized, the friars would renounce the grace of working, becoming a burden to society and overly dependent on benefactors. Therefore, they were to seek alms only when it is necessary, and even this should be considered a form of work because it entails fatigue and shame. The brothers who work at acquiring them engage in an exchange of goods. They receive material support and offer spiritual rewards in return, enabling benefactors to gain spiritual merit. In recommending manual labor, Francis also insists on avoiding idleness, which he calls the enemy of the soul and the root of all evil. He values work for its ascetic function but, above all, saw it as an expression of the lesser brother's vocation. For this reason, despite his emphasis on radical poverty, he authorized his friars to have the tools and instruments suitable for their trades. For Francis, manual work is a gift from Providence, allowing him to express his identity as a friar minor, give back the gifts he has received, and imitate the humility of the incarnate Word. Based on theological principles, Francis welcomed work as a grace granted by God, considering it primarily a value, above its ascetic motives and other benefits. In this way, he manifests the logic of gift. 3.1. Francis regrets the underestimation of manual labor. Francis explicitly advocates for manual labor in his three fundamental writings that regulate the life of his friars: the earlier rule, the later rule or regula bullata, and the testament. He urges his brothers to embrace humility, regardless of their social background, emphasizing that work is an excellent way of giving back to God what they have graciously received. The shift in the appreciation of manual labor began during Francis's lifetime. Initially, the first friars worked as day laborers in others' homes. However, as the order grew and became more institutionalized, manual labor was increasingly performed within the fraternity and relegated to whom the Lord has given the grace. A growing number of brothers began to devote themselves to prayer, preaching, and study. This shift led to the friars acquiring a social status that physically distanced them from working with the poor and like the poor. They worked on behalf of the needy but not among them. When Francis wrote his testament, he was concerned that a sector of the order was beginning to underestimate manual labor, considering it servile work and inappropriate for consecrated persons. Signs of discrimination were also emerging among the friars, based on social origin, priestly ministry, or intellectual knowledge. 3.2. The grace of working. Labor expresses and reinforces the total consecration of every daily moment to God, ensuring that nothing extinguishes the spirit of holy prayer and devotion. Contrary to the notion that manual work brutalizes, Francis highly valued it, recognizing that it makes the spiritual life more real and authentic. By working faithfully and devotedly in a climate of faith and total dedication, the friar collaborates with the creative God, recreates himself, shares the lot of the poorest, and joins nature in its longing for final liberation in Christ. During the day, those friars skilled in manual labor would stay in the houses of lepers or in other suitable places, serving everyone humbly and devoutly. Francis harshly criticized Brother Fly, who hoarded the gifts he received and failed to make them fruitful. Persistent idleness was grounds for expulsion from the fraternity. The friars were cautioned not to be ensnared by material possessions, consumerism, or turning work into the primary goal of their lives. By imitating the humility and poverty of our Lord Jesus Christ, the friars would be free of all malice and greed, allowing them to fully dedicate themselves to the kingdom of heaven. They were also advised against accepting any office that could cause scandal or harm their souls. Freed from all forms of possession, they could joyfully harmonize with all of creation and continually praise the Creator. 3.3. Labor in the logic of gift. Recognizing themselves as lesser brothers before God, the friars will work in the humblest positions, avoiding self-promotion and careerism. As poor people, they will resort to the table of the Lord when necessary. As minors, they will be subject to all. Poverty and minority are not painful exercises of self-perfection but joyful responses to divine love and contributions to the construction of the fraternity. Above all, Francis wanted his friars to maintain a perspective of faith and a sense of gratuitousness. Unlike monastic communities, Franciscan friars should not possess the means of production, either within or outside their fraternity. He asked them to work with their own hands among the poor, viewing labor as grace and wages as gifts from divine providence. In any circumstance, the friars should testify that everything is grace. Therefore, when they do not receive fair wages, they should not protest but joyfully have recourse to the table of the Lord, an expression that evokes the Eucharist. This criterion is theological, not legal, and reinforces the sense of gratuitousness. 4. Fraternal relationships are the most precious wealth. Today, it is commonly believed that the main purpose of economic activity is the maximization of wealth, often excluding the possibility of free and fraternal relationships. The market is seen as a battlefield where each person defends their own interests without altruistic consideration. In this view, the neighbor is merely an adversary to be overcome or deceived. Those who are not strong or clever enough to survive this economic struggle must seek refuge in the social realm. Business is business, or as Hobbes puts it, your death is my life. Living with nothing of his own, Francis of Assisi becomes a universal brother, completely free to serve all, regardless of whether they are rich or poor, friend or enemy, virtuous or sinner. His freedom is not synonymous with selfishness or indifference but a joyful openness to universal fraternity. He asks his friars to embrace the most profound and radical poverty, both personally and communally. They should not make anything their own, neither house, nor place, nor anything at all. His response to the Bishop of Assisi clearly shows that his austerity and economic choices have theological and relational motivations. Lord, if we had possessions, we would need arms for our protection. For disputes and lawsuits usually arise out of them, and, because of this, love of God and neighbor are greatly impeded. Therefore, we do not want to possess anything in this world. Francis embraces poverty for theological reasons rather than ascetical or penitential ones. His friars need to be free from any obstacle to follow Christ, who was poor and a stranger and lived on alms. While all earthly things are good and necessary, God is the only absolute. Francis loves, respects, and admires nature. He does not use it as a despotic lord, nor does he allow himself to be trapped by it. His poverty is an expression of freedom, mastery over creation, and openness to cosmic fraternity. Conclusion. By embracing work as an ordinary means of subsistence and giving up money, the friars express their minority and share the insecurity of those who struggle daily to find necessary resources. Having renounced property and material goods at the beginning of their religious life, Friars can view the poor as their brothers and, like them, beg when it is necessary. Their poverty and humility are relational, more important than renouncing certain goods. Poverty is generosity in donating oneself. Francis continually asserted that fraternal relationships are the most precious wealth. Being poor and lesser, the friars can become universal brothers. Conversely, any greedy accumulation of goods obstructs the necessary circulation of wealth and fosters distrust and suspicion. Francis's teachings and way of life demonstrate that true wealth lies not in material possessions but in the richness of fraternal bonds and the freedom to serve all in love and humility.